On this episode of What's Going On, we're delving into a conversation that affects every single one of us, the water we drink. We're talking about the lead crisis in our communities, how it started, why it continues, and most importantly, what we can do to stop it. I'm joined by three powerful voices in this fight. Dr. Yana, together with Paul Swartz, an expert in environmental health, and Robert Miranda, a veteran activist who's been sounding the alarm on lead in Milwaukee's water for years. This is more than a conversation, it's a call to action. Let's get into it. Don't miss it, airing this week on all streaming platforms. Follow us on Civic Media US or wherever you follow your podcast. Please like and subscribe as well.
Hello. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I want to talk a little bit about an issue that has impacted this nation for far too long, a hidden conversation that has not been forthcoming with our nation, and I would say a situation that impacts and affects most of the citizens of this nation. And it is more than troubling and disheartening that in a nation the wealthiest on earth, that many of our citizens, young and old, have been faced with what I think is an unconscionable reality. Again, the wealthiest nation on earth, and yet we are struggling on a daily basis with clean water, a subject matter that we plan on drilling down on in many different episodes. And I want to introduce a gentleman who is, you know, right at the apex of the conversation with lead in the water. A good friend, Paul Swartz. He's the co-founder of Campaign for Lead Free Water. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Earl, and I appreciate this opportunity to be part of a conversation with you and with the American people about this important issue.
You know, Paul, I didn't know prior to the situation that occurred in Flint, Michigan. I don't know how many years ago that's been now. About the inherent danger that was in the water in this nation, because I always knew of our nation, one who was spending billions of dollars to make sure that water was clean all over the earth. We took an interest in that, and we thought that it was something. I mean, our nation, for the most part, was something that was really every human being should have, and that was fresh, clean water. A human right is kind of the way that our nation looked at this. Over decades, I remember as a young boy watching on television the news shows that were showing where we were in Africa and other parts of this nation, spending money to make sure that children and people got to drink lead-free water. What happened, Paul?
Well, you know, when we turn on our taps to fill up a glass of water, a baby bottle or a pot for cooking food, we don't often think that the water might be compromised because it's out of sight and out of mind. And we just assume that if there was a problem, they would tell us. And really, that's never been the case in our country. But it's a story we tell each other.
So, Paul, let's begin, because we're going to be drilling down in many episodes of this, get the lead out. Tell us a little bit about Paul Swartz. How a little bit about you and how you wound up on this track.
Yeah, so like a lot of kids of my generation, and I was, you know, born in the late 50s. I came up with the rise of consciousness about all sorts of injustices and inequities in our country. And Earth Day happened. Marvin Gaye happened. And this just exploding concern about the air, water, land, food around us. And so it was sort of all around me at that time. And I remember when I was off to college, I was doing a lot of analysis about what was going on politically in the country and in our communities. And I decided to take a year off and found a Ralph Nader group working on water and found a job where I could be paid to talk. So I knocked on, learned how to knock on doors and talk to ordinary people about water in their lives and to help mobilize them and engage them on that issue. In the course of that, I went back to school, and then Ronald Reagan was elected. And I read this Project 2025 for his first term called Mandate for Leadership out of the Heritage Foundation. And in that, there were all these people who were sort of giving their calling card through their submissions to that Mandate for Leadership, saying how they would work for corporations and undermine protections that were just being put together in our country around air, land, and water. And I remember the U.S. Senate confirmation hearings for this guy, James Watt, out of Colorado, out of this Law and Policy Center, where he said God had put us on earth to have dominion over earth and to use up all of the land and the air and the water. And that was man's right, and that he was going to take the oppressive boot heel of regulation off of the corporations all across the country. So he had married this white Christian nationalism and corporatism together. And then I listened to the hearings for the confirmation of the head of the US EPA. And it was this woman out of the same Law and Policy Center out of Colorado. And her name was Ann Burford Gorsuch. She said the same things for the EPA and how it was too much regulation. And she decided that she was going to free Americans from these onerous things. And I thought, you know, I can finish school at any time, but I want to be in this fight for my family and my community and for our country. I decided to take it on. You know who Ann Burford Gorsuch's son is?
No, I don't.
Justice Gorsuch of the Supreme Court. That's her little baby boy who is on the Supreme Court. She got run out of town because she embezzled money from the toxic waste cleanup fund called the Superfund. Justice Gorsuch's pedigree. But that's so, my work really started.
So the apple didn't fall too far from the tree with the Gorsuch family.
No.
You know, Paul, it is really kind of ironic that you talk about that going back to 1978, 79, 1980, early 1980s. And we're talking about today, you know, that's exactly what is taking place today. And so I say to people who think that this has just come into vogue, no, you know, we're sitting back and many people are saying, you know, President Trump is doing all of these things. And I constantly say to people, there's no way possible that he could have orchestrated what we are dealing with today himself. He's nothing more than, you know, a piece of the furniture for the people who have orchestrated this. And as we deal with what we're going to be dealing with in the coming years, this lead in the water issue is one that has to be brought to an even broader group of people. After it's all said and done, you know, water is life. That's the way it's always been projected. Our bodies are what, 70 some odd percent water? If we don't take care of the water, there's no humanity, is it?
Animal
life, no plant life, there's nothing.
I mean, really, we're a water planet. If you think about the name of our planet, we should be called Planet Ocean, not Planet Earth. And like you said, water, it's most of who we are. You can live without food longer than you can live without water.
So I guess I want people to know as we begin this quest and this trek to educate people, we're going to bring great guests, national guests, international guests. We're going to be joined by two great friends, Dr. Yana Lambert-Nidu and another good friend, Robert Miranda. And so we're going to begin what we believe is going to be a landmark discussion about what we can do to make sure that this issue that is being, you know, kind of silenced is brought to the light. Is it safe to say that, Paul?
Yeah, I think this is going to be really a game changer, Earl, in terms of thinking about how it is people can build power to change the concrete things that affect them. We're going to be focused in on lead and water. But I think you can safely say that the same lessons that we're going to explore in history that we're going to explore here and the lessons about how to move forward can apply to so many other issues as well.
I want to thank Civic Media for allowing us the opportunity, Paul, and the platform to drill down on this in a manner that probably is not going to be done anywhere else around this country. You guys are going to, you and Dr. Yana are going to bring in the specialists from all over this nation again, and even some from outside of this nation, to have frank and open discussions that people can then, you know, you can't make decisions unless you're informed, right? You can make decisions, but it's always better to make decisions after you've been informed. And that is what, at the root of what we're going to be doing over these episodes, is to inform people about, number one, this horrible problem that exists, the impact that it has on children, on adults, on human beings. Paul, things that can be done in the interim to, you know, at least give protection, because this is not something that's going to be fixed, you know, by the end of 2025, Paul, and it may be safe to say it may not be done, you know, by 2050.
Yeah, I mean, the good news, Earl, is that we have tools in our tool chest that we can pull out and use to protect people and to make systemic and systematic change. But we didn't get into this problem in a minute, and we're not getting out in a minute.
In Washington, D.C., it's your home. You said you were in California for a number of years, and you were dealing with water issues in California. How did, you know, California was always, to me, from what I knew about California, a state that was always open-minded and liberal, and so it was always a state that you could have these kinds of conversations in and be accepted to have these kind of conversations. What was, in the early stages, what were the conversations like with you and in California in the early stages of this conversation?
You know, in California, they have a saying, Earl, that whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting. And water has always been at the heart of power dynamics and politics in the Golden State. And you can see that reflected in culture, like Chinatown. What's the backstory? It's about water and water rights for Los Angeles. Water is life there, and water is power and money. And so you can imagine the tussle that goes on there all the time about this issue. But the conversation in California was about the biggest, most powerful institutions, the oil and chemical industry, the ag industry, real estate development, and who was going to gain access to water, both to use it and to dump into it. And that was most of the conversation in California. The public health side of it, the pieces about lead and water were buried very deep and not surfaced at that time. In California.
You know, when you've got an ocean at your doorstep, water clearly has to be the number one asset, right? I mean, we live on a lake here in Milwaukee where I am, but an ocean is altogether something altogether different. And so you can kind of see where there was a fight for that, because resources come along with that.
Yeah, so the freshwater landscape and water in California comes from all the snowfall and the big river system throughout the state. Unfortunately, what the after settlement of California by the Europeans, what ended up happening was that they exploited the water in such ways as to fundamentally change the capacity of the landmass in California to be healthy and to support healthy life. What they did was exploit it for huge profit for just a very few people. And you can see that today in all of the problems that we see manifest with rising temperatures, with fire, with inequitable distribution of water throughout the state. And you see the suffering of large numbers of people who in this water-rich state don't have access to water or don't have access to clean water for drinking and for cooking.
As a young man, when you began this quest and this trek with the water campaign, how were you able to connect? Clearly, this is something that didn't just start. There have been clearly, if I don't know this to be a fact, but I'm sure you can weigh in on it. This has been an ongoing fight and battle for clean water. Is it for decades, or has it been going on for a century or more?
Well, you know, on the Latin waterfront, the Romans figured out and the Greeks figured out 2,000 years ago that lead and water shouldn't mix and that there were bad outcomes when it did. So in human consciousness, that connection has been really clear for a long time, although people have a more nuanced and scientifically based understanding of why that's a problem. But when I started out knocking on doors in over a 3-year period. I knocked on 100,000 households and talked to 50,000 people about water. And that's what gave me my education about how people understand and connect to water. And I think for a lot of people, water is at the center of their spirituality. It's important for them in their recreation and in their sports life, hunting and fishing. And a lot of people, though, were pretty disconnected from the water that was coming out through their tap and what was going on with that, because that's out of sight and out of mind. And so making those connections with people, talking about the science of what's going on in those pipes and coming out of the tap and how it affects the human body, connecting to people who were concerned for their pregnant wives and mothers and for their children, who were very vulnerable, that gave me quite an education about across class, race, sex, all of those lines that are both real and imaginary in our country. What I learned out of it is that people had a deep and abiding connection to seeing that the water that they drank was clean, and the water that they swam in and that their communities were affected by, that we were moving forward, not moving backwards in giving protection.
Paul, do you ever get frustrated knowing that, you know, money has more value than people in this world? And so one of the main reasons why lead is in the water is financial. Somehow is more important than a living human being. And so even knowing that lead is a problem in the water, businesses continue to say, well, we have to do this. We can't, you know, it's cost us too much money to do the right thing. You ever get frustrated with that?
One of the things about doing the work that I've been doing since 1979 to this date is that you very quickly understand that political systems and power concede absolutely nothing without a fight. And that the asymmetry of power, how much power the moneyed interests have, and the, in this case also the water utilities, many of whom, most of whom are public utilities, but act as almost unregulated monopolies in our communities, that there's joy in the fight to protect our communities and to build power to confront those institutions. Of course, there's frustration when you see that the terms of the debate and the false narrative and stories that are being told by those that not only control the politics, but control the media and effectively can silence people and punch down on communities and on folks, you feel that hurt and you see it working out in the harm that's being done to people. For me, what that does is it reignites and lights a fire over and over again for justice and for doing the right thing. So yes, frustration, knowing that some values of money or just power, you know, are holding sway. It leads to some wary moments where you got to do a gut check, and where it drives you to look for allies and for partners and for other people who share the same values of working for justice for all, and not only for all the humans on the planet, but because we're part of the planet, for the planet as well.
People to know that this is a series, that we are going to do this many, many times over, whatever amount of time it takes to get this message out. We have been fortunate and blessed. The civic media is going to stand with us, Paul, and give us an opportunity to spread this message all across this nation and clearly all across the world. What are your thoughts about being able to now have a platform where now there aren't people who are going to tell us, oh, whoa, wait, you can't say that, you can't do that. What are your thoughts about the freedoms that we are going to have to do this?
That's a really good question, Earl. And we're in a challenging moment with the media landscape right now, where a lot of the media, whatever its ideological underpinnings and whichever bubble people are being preached to, aren't able to or interested in looking in depth and from all different angles at a complex and nuanced issue. I mean, on the surface of it, the issue of lead and water is very simple. Lead and water shouldn't mix. But when you think about what the science of it is, when you think about what the regulations and the laws are, when you think about how people experience it in their communities and what the outcomes are, when you think about from a justice perspective, or when you think about it from the perspective of economics or human rights, and is it a human right? On so many layers and places, the 30-second soundbite, the 2-minute package that goes out on media or the Instagram account can't do it justice. And so to have a platform where we can get deeper into all the layers of the onion and unpack it and be in a conversation with people about this really could be a game changer. And so for civic media and for the skills, Earl, that you've developed to facilitate this conversation and help move it forward, that's not something that I've seen done in all of my years of work. And so this is truly an honor and a very hopeful moment. And hopefully it sets a new template for a way that this medium can be used to empower people and engage people and to exchange ideas and to really change the outcomes at the end of the day. I mean, what's interesting about lead and water is people sort of know what lead is and they can pronounce the name of the contaminant. There's all sorts of stuff in the drinking water that I just sort of call generically methyl ethyl, bad stuff. And people, when they hear PFOA or PFAS, really important contaminants that are in our water forever, plastics, their brain just sort of shuts down. But, you know, with lead, we have this opportunity to talk about something that even if people haven't thought deeply about it to this point, they know it's not good. And the question is, as it always is we understand there's a problem, but what are we going to do about it?
And go ahead. You know, Paul, people know that lead is not good. We know it now. They've known it for quite some time, as you said, the Romans knew. And yet, even today, this is still happening. They're still producing things that put lead in the water. This is a battle, right? I mean, it's a battle for the hearts and souls of this nation and people. And it's a political battle. Is it safe to say that?
There's no doubt that at the heart of this is the question of priorities and what gets prioritized and who gets heard. And what resources get allocated. And those are the definitions of what politics are.
Well, I would also venture to say, Paul, that as we begin to move forward with this and the conversations that I know we're going to be having, one of the things that I think when we have these conversations, and you have always said this, there is something we can do in the interim. And part of what we'll be discussing during these podcasts are things that people can do to protect themselves and not have to be solely dependent upon our government. Is it safe to say that?
Absolutely, Earl. And I think we should not despair, because we have tools at hand to make a difference to protect ourselves, our families, and our communities and our nation. And we're going to talk a lot about those tools. But just to give a teaser, we are receiving messages from water utilities, government agencies, and the medical and public health and environmental health communities and school officials, among others, that tell us that water is mainly a problem of old plumbing, and that our water utilities have already addressed it through chemical treatments, and that in the rare cases where contamination does occur, it's easy to identify and resolve. Well, that's not true. Most of the problem has been put on to people and outside of the institutions that are supposed to be protecting us. The positive side of that is that if you use a point of use faucet mounted or countertop filter that has certification for lead removal, which is NSF 42 and 53 with a claim for lead removal, then you can greatly reduce or end lead exposure today. And the fact is that it's going to take us pulling together a large public education campaign, of which this podcast is a part, to let people know that lead in water is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's out of almost every tap, whether or not you have a lead service line, and that you can use one of these filters to end the scourge of lead water today.
You know, Paul, I guess some of the other things that we'll also be discussing is the fact that, you know, lead can be passed on through the bloodlines of a pregnant mother to her fetus. Is it safe to say that?
Yes. I mean, lead is one of those contaminants that gets passed from mother to child in the womb. And so we're all with a body burn. If you looked at our ancestors before lead was used, and you look at us now, normal levels of lead that we find in people is 1,000 times greater than our ancestors from prehistoric times. And that's a body burden that we hold, all of us. In addition to that, there's countless exposures to lead throughout our lives, in our homes, in our schools, in the drinking water, in the soil, everywhere. So the key thing is to say, what do we do to prevent that exposure now? And that's what we're going to learn. One of the things we're going to learn in this podcast.
Paul, again, you are one of the experts on this. I don't know, but I will say this. The fact that they've already identified lead, we know what it is. We know the impact that it has on human beings, but it is something that's still being mined. It's still a cheap and long lasting, you know, mineral that can clearly, you know, last for centuries. And so even in the face of the inherent dangers in lead, we're still manufacturing it and we're still using it. Why?
Yeah. So we have known for so long that lead is just a terrific disruptor of life. that it can cause miscarriage and spontaneous abortion and attention deficit disorder and heart problems and so many other problems. And so the question that you ask, why are we still using this substance, is at the center of an exploration that we need to make. But I think the reason why we're still using it is because vested interests have a lot of money to make with this, and because there's a whole water industrial complex on the water side of it that sees profit to be made in this. And also fear of people finding out that there's a problem and not wanting to be blamed for that problem. And so instead of just sort of squaring up to it and saying, we need to look at the alternatives, pointing the finger at other folks and saying it's their problem and allowing the problem to keep going on. You know, there's lead-free plumbing, in quotes, that's being sold in the United States. And under the federal law, lead-free plumbing allows lead to be in contact with water. So even the name of it lies to the public when you go to the hardware store or you have your plumber go and buy that lead-free plumbing and bring it home to use in your home.
I just sit back and I think, and you would think that the medical industry, the insurance companies and others, and the hospital and the medical industry would say, this cost us so much money in the healthcare side of things. If there's any way that they track that, that you would think that they would say, hey, long term, this is costing us more money on the health side of things, Paul, than it's even worth to continue to do this. Has that conversation ever been had?
Yes, Earl. I mean, there's been a number of studies that show that the costs of all this lead are astronomical, and the savings by getting it out are much greater than the costs of dealing with the problem. But you're absolutely right. With health, with crime, with intellectual achievement, and so many other things that we're shorting our population on, this is the moment to make that paradigm shift.
Paul, what do you want to say as we get ready to wrap this up?
Just a thanks to you and Civic Media that this is such an opportunity for all of us as presenters and for people who engage with us to make huge difference on an issue that will have really big ramifications for the health and the safety and the flourishing of our homes and our communities. Thank you so much.
What we are about to quest that we are about to begin is that down the road, there are people who will probably be listening to this and hopefully studying what we have been able to put together long after you and I are both gone. And I think that part of it is what is so exciting to me about, is that there could possibly be people who will study what it is we are beginning a quest to present. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. Both the mass audience that we hope to reach, but also selected audiences in academia and government and public health, in the science and engineering community, community organizers, and many other groups. This can be a real game changer.
So, Paul, I want to thank you, man, and I can't wait till we get started.
Looking forward to it, Earl.
All right. Have a great 4th, and we'll talk soon.
Take care.